Welcome back to Earwax. I am Cody, joined by Hillary.
That is me.
This week we are talking about Queen Latifah's All Hail the Queen 1989 debut. Before we get into that, like, share, subscribe, comment, and also buckle in, because we are taking a break.
We're going to take a break, and a real break this time.
The last time was a real break, too.
No, but a scheduled break. Our plan is to be back on Friday, September 4th. We're taking a summer break.
Summer break, going to come back all kinds of amped with who knows what.
Yes.
We have not planned those records yet.
Yes, but they're going to be good. We got 2 months to plan them.
We're going to plan them all the day before.
Yeah.
We've never done that before.
We've never done that.
But in the moment, we are talking about Queen Latifah and All Hail the Queen. Late 80s, early 90s hip-hop records can be a little shaky sometimes.
Yep.
And I love them. We did Eric B. and Rakim.
Mm-hmm. So good.
So great. Here's what I'm going to say about this record. Her flow sells a lot of the lines that I think you can kind of blow by. There are some really great lyrics on this record, but I think her flows are better than her lyrics.
That I completely agree with you. And I do want to say, I also agree with the fact that if you pick these songs apart, you're going to find chunks where you're like, whoa, that was a solid fucking verse.
Totally.
Like, every line was really good. You'll find a couple lines where you're like, that's a legendary line. Mm-hmm. But her flow is so fast and so unique that it is really impressive. She could be saying the same thing like that a lot of MCs do, you know, I'm the best MC.
Sure.
Look at me. I'm the one who always does it the best. But the way that she says it makes you feel like it's true.
Yeah. Well, and any kind of like the best version, I was talking with my friend Jamal about this, the best version of 80s hip hop production is minimalist with jazz samples.
Yeah.
Anytime you start going like heavy synth, your mileage starts to vary. But this record really trades in excellent samples, and there's a warmth to the recording, and she navigates those samples in and around those samples beautifully.
This is such a solid album.
Yeah.
I think the production is top tier.
Agreed.
And honestly, we needed to hear a lot more about the producers that were involved on this album in like higher frequency these days.
For
right?
Sure.
So it's really nice to be getting an opportunity to talk about them today, because the work that they do on this album shows it's amazing.
And it's a great, part of the conceit of the show for me is that every week is an education for me. Mm-hmm. Right. And I know hip hop, but I'm not by no means an aficionado, mm-hmm. right? Especially that era. So going in and looking and researching all these names and finding all these people who are foundational to what the genre has become, mm-hmm. and like taking a moment to give them their flowers. Cause you know, DJ Mark the 45 King, Prince Paul, like all these people have had a major hand in shaping hip hop, and I don't think that they often get quite as elevated to the mainstream as somebody like Queen Latifah, yeah. or certainly Jay-Z or any of those bigger name producers. And their contributions are key to the development of rap and hip hop.
Mm-hmm. I also think that this album serving just as like a showcase for Queen Latifah. First of all, this is her debut album. She's fucking 19 this thing comes out.
I know.
And this is like a fully adult album.
Oh,
like
yeah.
This is an album somebody twice her age would put out and get insane accolades for.
Yeah.
You know, like she also, I think that a lot of people from our generation know her primarily as a movie star. Isn't that crazy to think about?
Yeah, well, I mean, her acting career has been longer
mm-hmm.
than her music career, but the music that she has made is substantial and
it's
consequential.
So good.
And, you know, what you said about it being an adult album is bang on, because there is a version, a lot of debut records from teenagers do not sound this mature.
Oh my God.
This is
most. Yeah, yeah. Most.
This is a fully formed artist stepping into a place where she controls it. Like, there is, like, she does not let go of this record at all. And she is in full control. And to do that, like you said, at 19, it's unbelievably impressive.
Also, she's just an incredibly chill person. Chill. It's so crazy. This album has been added to the Library of Congress's National Recording Registry in an attempt to honor and preserve its impact on music history. So you're 19 years old, you put out an album that everybody's officially like, this is music history and we have to preserve it forever. It's just like the start of many firsts in your career. She's the first rapper to ever perform in a Super Bowl halftime show. Male or female.
Wow.
That's fucking awesome.
That is, I would not have guessed that.
I had no idea. Also, I guess she's going to be on The Voice later this year. She's cool. She has owned a video store in her lifetime. She owned like several businesses.
I think she's the first hip hop star to have a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame as well.
Is that true?
Yeah, I'm almost positive. Yeah.
Oh my God. This is getting me fired up, because I'm just thinking about how being a woman in hip hop at this time is already fucking nearly impossible to be appreciated for what you're doing. And the fact that she's made an entire career out of being like, I'm basically the first woman or person to do anything. And I like never even brag about it. It just like is. Like part of who I am.
Her name is literally Queen.
It's so cool.
I mean, like, that so in and of cool. itself is a bit of a brag. What I love, she's one of those figures who, similar to like The Rock, they've just conquered media.
Yeah.
They've just conquered. She's a multi, has tons of great records. She had her own sitcom. She's mm-hmm. done movie. Like, what? She's going to be on The
Voice.
She had
like a talk show. Yeah, she's
just conquered media.
Yeah.
Like, cool.
Yeah. I know. I bet there's like a whole generation of people who don't even know what she does, what she does for a living. They're just like, she just is like an icon.
She's
just
an icon.
Like, does whatever she wants.
Wow. What a life.
Yeah.
Can I just be an icon? God, who would my fan base be? Oh my God. I am.
You're like, I never mind. I take it back. I don't want to be an icon.
I am disgusted at the thought of me having a fan base. Ew.
Oh my God.
But who does deserve their fan base and a cool fan base is Queen Latifah.
Yeah, fuck yeah.
So let's talk about All Hail the Queen. Great name for a record.
Yeah. Produces this and it's a fly one. It had to be
that way. He's one of my sons. It's a family affair and then we're out of here. This week's album of the week, All Hail the Queen by Queen Latifah, released November 7th, 1989. As we mentioned, debut studio album produced by many. Another produced by many.
It's kind of produced by some.
By some. You're right. Not as many as some we've done.
Produced by a few.
Yeah.
A select few.
Hand few.
Yeah.
A hand few?
Yeah.
Who said that?
Her real name is Dana Owens.
Pretty cool.
Yep.
I mean,
Queen Dana.
Queen Dana.
Yeah.
Queen Dana Owens. She was raised in Newark and East Orange, New Jersey.
Ooh.
She grew up Baptist, but went to Catholic school, which I didn't know you could do that.
Oh, yeah.
I'd never considered.
You just got to just shut the hell up. God, I don't want anybody finding out I'm a different kind of similar religion.
I've got my rosaries. Because I grew up in a Baptist household, and there was a near us, there was St. Mary's Colgan. They mm-hmm. were the Catholic school. And I just assumed they were all Catholic. It feels like it should be, right?
Yeah. I'm honestly,
I know.
I don't know. My grandma was Irish Catholic.
All right.
And I would go to church with her and I'd tune out the whole time.
You weren't super into it?
No.
You weren't? We could convert you.
Oh, you could try. Yeah. Many have tried before.
Over in the Baptist. I just thought that was super weird. I didn't know that was a thing, but apparently it is. Maybe I'm just out of touch.
I don't know.
Can you be a lapsed Baptist like you can be a lapsed Catholic? I would consider myself a lapsed Baptist.
It's fun to say, yeah, so I think Baptist. You should go with it.
Cool. When she was 8, she found the name Latifa, meaning delicate and very kind, in a book of Arabic names. Alternatively, I also found that it was her cousin who gave her this name.
Okay, well, I have the answer.
Oh, you have the answer? Both of those,
yeah.
Interesting.
She was 8 years old, and her cousin, Sharonda, brought over a book that had a bunch of Arabic names in it and their meanings.
So I was
right. So it's both.
I was right both times.
It's both. Latifa said, delicate, sensitive, kind, and nice were the words that she read in that book. And I was like, man, that is such like a clear window into somebody's intention for who they're trying to be every day. To just be like, hey, I want this name to represent who I am because I feel like that's who I want to be. I was like, that is very sensitive. Yeah, that's sweet.
She pulls it off, but I think the one thing that's missing there is confidence, right? Like,
yeah.
Like, not that she doesn't have it. Mm-hmm. In fact, that like she could almost redefine the word Latifa now because there's such a confidence through just the way she talks in all of her interviews, certainly on this record.
I feel like Queen sort of does that.
You know what? You're right.
But
you mean you think that Queen is a better descriptor than confident?
Okay, yes. But I have a quote where she said, I felt like that name sort of fit me. I've been kicking around a lot of different things, but I didn't want to be MC Latifa. So I decided Queen. Queen Latifa is like, you know, every woman is a queen, should be treated as such. At least that's what my mom taught me. Mm-hmm. So I just kind of connected the two. I ran it past my boys. They liked it. So I kept it.
I saw
her in a bunch of different interviews where she was like, queen to me is representing that all women should be respected as queens. And I was like, oh, man, people have been really wrong about her.
And is definitively better than MC Latifa.
Oh my God, it's so much better.
That's like one syllable too many. Yeah. It just feels like, ew, no. Queen Latifa is perfection. She was a member of her high school basketball team, which won 2 consecutive state championships.
Fucking cool.
Fucking sick.
Yeah.
I found a whole interview with her coach talking about her being like the enforcer on the team.
It's like she really can do everything.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
She's just a state champion basketball player. Damn. Multi-time platinum or whatever. Just okay. Yeah. All right. And her coach said that like when the other team's player would start to get hot, he would send her in and be like, go take care of her.
Yes.
Like she was the enforcer, and that she would have played more except the person that who played in front of her was the number one recruit in the nation. So
what?
Yeah. So she had to ride the pine for a little bit.
Dang. Yep.
So there you go.
That's a crazy coincidence.
Yeah.
I also know that Latifa really loved to sing before she was even into hip hop. She said, well, I used to sing before I even got into rapping. I used to sing and I was in an act and stuff and high school plays, grammar school and talent shows and things like that. And then church or whatever. Singing was my thing. And as I got into high school, you know, it was the wild days and rapping that was really just starting to pick up strong. And it was like the youth music. And I used to do the human beatbox.
Youth music.
Yeah, youth music.
The youth music.
That's hip hop at this time.
Ooh, that sounds like an old person.
100%.
The youth 100%. Music.
100%. Following up on that, she said, in high school, in my senior year of high school, I was hanging out in the bathrooms and I transferred to that school. So I was just like, let me see what's up. And I wound out hanging out in the bathrooms and girls would just start rhyming in the bathrooms. And really, dudes would be coming in the bathrooms too, because it was the place to be.
What? Well, we had different high school experiences. Who's hanging out? I've seen this trope a number of times represented throughout. I did not hang out in the bathrooms in my high school.
Well, now, they did.
I wasn't a hellraiser either, but... You know, I hard to believe, I know, but you hanging out in the bathrooms?
Yeah, because it's like, where are you less likely to get caught for just like hanging out at school? The place where the least amount of people are going to walk in on you doing
it. But isn't that like the first place that any teacher would look is the bathrooms? Because that's like the known hangout spot.
I don't know, Cody.
I don't either.
I'm not in her brain.
And I'm not going to go conduct a study with children about like, hey, no, why are you hanging out in the bathroom?
Let's ask children about bathrooms.
No, I'm not. I am curious, not in a weird way, but like just, why are you hanging out in bathrooms? I didn't. Yeah, okay. All right.
The acoustics.
The acoustics. Yeah, that's right. Problem solved.
And I continue quote. Okay, dudes are going to be hanging out in the bathrooms too. Okay. And then she said, so I would just start hitting the beats on the bathroom stalls. These girls, Tangy B and Landy D, would just start freestyling and they were killing it. So I would just keep the beat going while they would just start rocking. You know, eventually I started beatboxing with them in the bathrooms and it came to a point where they had to battle these girls from another school. And there were three of those girls who were on the mic and only two of us. So I had to write my first rhymes. So my brother had turntables. I literally went in to his room, threw on the instrumental of I Need a Beat by LL Cool J and started writing. I was like, okay, what are we gonna write? So I wrote this battle rap and we wound up battling these girls and we killed them.
This is all taking place in the bathroom.
Yeah. No. Dumb. She also said that at that same show where she battled those girls, coincidentally, Tretch from Naughty by Nature was also in that show before they knew each other.
That's incredible. And just like she was put in the position of having to write because they just needed a body.
Yeah, of course.
And
then she was like, oh, shit, am I so good at this?
Yes.
And then she said that she felt like she just had to keep writing and rapping because all the shows just kept coming. She was like, oh, I guess we have another one coming up. I guess I'm doing this.
I'm kind of obligated to. Yeah, I guess. It just keeps happening.
You guys need a third member. And by the way, those two girls, Landy D and Tangy B, those were the two girls that she starts her first all-female hip-hop group with.
Ladies Fresh?
Yes.
Great name.
Ladies Fresh.
Ladies Fresh.
It sounds so cool and simultaneously also like a tampon ad.
You know, I'm not super locked into the language on tampon ads, but you said it and that sounds right.
Yeah, that's a privilege, Cody.
I know. I know. It is. And I acknowledge that and I'm trying to be better.
Brave.
I'll really listen in to next time.
Thank you. Learn some more about tampons.
I know about tampons.
Oh, I know tampons. I know.
I'm not a tampon aficionado, yeah. But like, I've been around the block.
Nice.
Wings, right?
Yikes. Yikes.
So she moved away from strictly beatboxing into rhyming when she joined the Flavor Unit, Ladies Fresh Flavor Unit. There's kind of a food theme here. So couple of the members, or one of the main members of Flavor Unit was DJ Mark the 45 King. And what are his two big productions?
Dude, okay, you're going to give me this because I will take it because they are cool.
It.
Okay, so you know him as the guy that made the 900 number, which was later used as the backing track to both Chad Jackson's Hear the Drummer Get Wicked and DJ Kool's Let Me Clear My Throat. That is a fucking huge song that's been sampled throughout time. But he's also the producer of Jay-Z's Hard Knock Life ghetto anthem. And he's the guy that put Dido's Thank You behind Eminem's Stan.
Yeah, he co-produced Stan and Hard Knock. That's fucking nuts.
Yeah. And like, you fucking never hear anybody talk about DJ Mark the 45 King. He fucking rules. He basically built this album. Latifah said that he produced every single song on this record except for three tracks.
Yeah.
This is so funny. She said that she met the 45 King because her mother worked at the high school she went to, and one of her friends basically begged her to get her mom to hire him to DJ for class parties.
Really?
Yes. The guy who put Dido's Thank You behind Eminem's Stan, they're like, please get him to DJ the school dance, please.
The local sock hop.
That's how small this guy is comparatively to his resume.
That's wild. Yeah, and it's a in the intro, we talked about people that, like, this being an education. When I saw this dude's name, I was like, I kind of know that. And you look at his resume, yeah. And you're like, wait, what?
Holy shit.
This guy needs to be world famous.
So talented. And I saw some footage of both of them together, just, like, working in a basement together. It reminded me of Outkast.
Oh, his choice of jazz samples, or his choice of samples in general, just pristine. Pristine.
I have a good quote from DJ Mark expanding a little bit on how he earned his name. He said, I was living in Queens and I had a lot of 45s. I had a whole bunch of 45s, in fact. I used to go to people's houses and ask them, do you have any old 45s? And that's how I got a lot of 45s.
A pretty literal name.
Yeah. Yep.
The 45 thing. I just have a lot.
But he like quadruples down on it.
Yeah.
He's
very
like
much.
A lot.
So many that I went out and got more and continued to get more.
Yeah. And then someday I'll have even more 45s and then I'll still be called the 45 King.
The 45 King.
Yeah.
I hope he has a crown made out of 45.
Oh, so cool.
Can we get that made?
Yeah.
Can we get our fabrication unit on that, Spencer?
I think he's passed. Is that true?
Oh, yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah.
Well, we should then, what we could do is make the crown out of 45s. I'm committed to this idea. And then, like, go to his grave.
2023.
That's all right.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Oh, it's good. It's fine.
It's fine.
It's chill.
It doesn't ruin my... But we can put the crown made out of 45s
on his grave. Yep. That's the way to do it.
Yeah.
The little gem in the middle is a 45 adapter. That's good.
This is teamwork.
I know. We're
this is
working.
Teamwork.
This is magic.
Yeah, it's a collaboration for the ages. DJ Mark, the 45 King, or Mark for short, had connections with...
Such a bummer.
He had connections with cool DJ Red Alert and DJ Chuck Chill Out. Mid-80s hip-hop names.
Why do my friends never have cool names like that?
DJ Chuck Chill Out. They helped elevate the Flavor Unit's profile. This is one of the instances where all of the articles clearly pull from the same singular source and it ends up confusing so fucking much.
Okay.
Because I saw many references to somebody named DJ King Gemini.
Okay, yeah. I couldn't find a lot of information about him on the internet, but I'm almost positive I saw somebody talk about him in an interview.
That's very possible.
I wrote it down a couple times.
In Queen Latifah's biography, Ladies First.
Yeah.
Zero mention of DJ King Gemini.
Interesting.
None. Now, it was written in the late 90s, so maybe things shifted and changed, but so many articles very clearly aggregated or pulled from whatever. Mm-hmm. And I could not find a single thing about DJ King Gemini outside of one obscure reference. And then everything, like everybody used the same quote.
Yeah, funny.
Queen Latifah's close friend and fellow Flavor Unit member, Ramsey, gave her and DJ Mark the 45 King $700, Ramsey's rent money, to make the demo.
I'm pretty sure Ramsey's the one who was like, please hire him to DJ at high school.
In that biography, she talked at length about Ramsey.
Mm.
And they were very close. But he put up his rent money to make the demo.
Damn, badass.
The demo?
And it feels a lot cleaner than the Celine Dion one.
Well, yeah. It does a little bit, a lot cleaner than that story.
We don't
need to relitigate that.
Yeah.
That demo was Wrath of My Mind and Princess of the Posse, which both appear
are
on
this
here.
Album. Yeah.
The story gets murkier here.
Ooh.
Because Queen Latifah's biography says that DJ Mark the 45 King got the record to Fab Five Freddy, who got a copy to Tommy Boy Records, who signed her. Clean. Uh-huh. However, there is a more detailed, convoluted version that exists from Dante Ross. And you have a little bit of stuff about him, right?
Yeah, I know. Dante Ross at this time was an A&R rep at Tommy Boy Records. He was just beginning his career, though. Yep. As you can probably assume, he hears the demo tape. He signs Latifah. Mm-hmm. But later on, he also signed these people, De La Soul, Digital Underground, Del the Funky Homo Sapien, KMD, so MF Doom's first big shot, yep. Busta Rhymes, ODB,
yep.
and also Lil Dicky.
One of these yes. things is not, well, no, no.
No, 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 he's, yeah. he's there, but it was like, what a random assortment. Like, that is a fucking, you signed, like,
yeah, some hitters.
Hip-hop legends, Del the Funky
Homo Sapien, Busta Rhymes, ODB. I mean, come on. Like, it isn't getting any better than that.
You fucking sign MF yep. Doom and ODB?
Yep.
That's already, like, I could retire, but...
Yeah, for real.
Yeah.
For
my arms growing, yes, you know, like all the women.
Here's the story according to Dante Ross. He says, first, 45 King came up to me. He knew who I was. At the That's a dramatic.
Yeah.
I took dramatic license with that. He but, knew. You know.
Yeah, yeah. You see, it's smarmier.
He knew who I was.
He actually knew who I was.
At the Latin Quarters, which was the club.
Yeah.
He put headphones in my ear on a fucking Walkman and said, yo, listen, he played me beats. And I was like, oh my God, you're incredible. I never heard anything like that. I was just so impressed. I was like, you have any groups? And he was like, yeah, I got my whole flavor unit. I'm going to come play you some shit. So he couldn't find my number. So he called me the next couple of days with Fab Five Freddy on the phone. He called me three-way and he started playing me artists over the phone. He played me Queen Latifah over the phone. And I was like, she sounds dope. He brought her to me. It was great. Then we fucking signed. Then we played basketball down the block from Tommy Boy. Uh-huh. Long story short. I don't know if it's short at this point. I ended up signing her and I was there when we made the first two singles.
That's so cool.
It's another case of somebody getting played over the fucking phone.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, this how do you discern quality over the phone? I just don't get it.
She's so good, though.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
And it's like Fab Five Freddy knows the 45 King at this point. So it's like, honestly, if you're hyping her up, like, I want to put your shit out.
Yeah.
So whoever you want to get to flow over it is great.
Also, we have mentioned Fab Five Freddy a number of times. Yeah. That is a cornerstone figure in hip hop.
He's hosting Yo MTV
Raps.
Yeah.
He's deeply influential in the evolution of hip hop and hip hop coverage. So for him to kind of co-sign them and her is like ringing endorsement.
Yeah.
You're good. Dante Ross wanted Grand Poobah to produce the entirety of the record. But do you know why he did not?
No.
He kept missing pre-production meetings.
Unbelievable.
And then when he finally did show up, rather than talking about producing Queen Latifah's record, Grand Poobah pitched signing a new group, Brand Nubian.
How disrespectful. And it's also like, you know what? She didn't need that around her. You know? She's working her ass off to get taken seriously in this community. And you come in and you go like, but what about a man?
But what about this other group?
Yeah.
I mean, but Brand Nubian.
No, cool.
Yeah, but also.
In this context, not very cool.
It's not a professional move.
Yeah.
It's not a professional move to miss meetings and then be like, hey, but I have this other project.
How disrespectful.
Would you like to hear a story attached to that?
Yep.
Dante Ross says, after he had missed all these pre-production meetings, he came back, Grand Poobah comes into him, he's like, hey, I've got this group, Brand Nubian. He had one song, Ain't Gonna Out Like That, off of some James mm-hmm. Brown loop, I swear to God, Cypress Hill, bless my brothers from another mother, but they took that hook they had from that song was the same Brand Nubian hook. And I know that Muggs heard that song. I love you, Muggs, no slight. But the demo that we never used, that became a Cypress Hill song.
No.
It happened. That's real. People don't even know. So anyways, I told him, yo, Poobah, fall back. I'm going to take this job at Elektra and we're going to like pop off over there. So that's how they like...
Crazy.
Yeah.
Wow.
Dante Ross would, he moved to Elektra because at Tommy Boy, he said that he was getting $300 a week to produce DJ, like open as a DJ for Queen Latifah, De La Soul, these acts, and also be like their road manager. So wow. He got offered a different, more money at Elektra and was like, see you.
See ya. Damn. I saw an interview where she very confidently stated to a reporter that the record was definitely coming out in early August, and it comes out in November, which is like not that big of a thing. Like literally nothing's ever set in stone. But I was just like, damn, this is the confidence of somebody who's putting out their very first album. Yep. To go on an interview and be like, and it's absolutely coming out next month.
And nothing could ever change it.
Yeah.
Just been outside.
Yes, yes. Except for 2 months.
2 months.
Or three months.
A number of months. Some months.
Yes, except for some months.
Some months. We've mentioned De La Soul a couple different times. Probably a good segue to talk about Native Tongues, which is this collective of musicians. Its members are all over this album, and they worked together frequently during this time. So some of the members: De La Soul, Tribe Called Quest, Jungle Brothers, Money Love, Black Sheep. Uh-huh. That's quite a collective. Yeah. Their sound is typified by diverse sampling, Afrocentric lyrics, and jazz beats. Jazz beats. So during the spring and summer of 1989, De La Soul, 3 Feet High and Rising, Jungle Brothers, Done by the Forces of Nature, and this record, All Hail the Queen, were tracked concurrently within the same studio, Calliope Productions. And this is very similar to the other collectives we've covered, most notably the Soulquarians, where folks would float in and out of sessions and studios and just hop on whatever, whenever. It was a pretty compressed amount of time from what I could see, but there are a number of people that talk about it. Moni Love especially was like, it was like kind of coffin quarters where you were on top of each other and it was, oh, you're doing this, let me hop on that.
Yeah.
I love stuff like that.
And they're genuinely, in every interview you see of her, she is so supportive of everybody that she's ever worked with.
Queen basically. Latifah.
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And it seems like it is reciprocal all the time. Like people that she works around, everybody's just like, yeah, we all just like, I want to be surrounded by people that want us to be our best self.
That seems to be the vibe of this record.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's just people kind of uplifting. There's obviously some, you know, braggadocio on it. But when you hear the folks that talk about it, like, De La Soul's on this record, man. Like, that's a very specific vibe where it's all about kind of a collaboration. Yeah. It's like the hip hop version of hippie, right?
Yeah.
Like, he's kind of loose. He's cool, but very collaborative, very loving.
Yeah,
I would
say. Yeah, just supportive and, like, especially, you know, you're part of a community that's going through so much bullshit. And on top of that, like hip hop at this time is very live and battle focused, like it is combative by nature. So you also have to learn to balance like how to be supportive and encouraging with one another in that environment.
Well, and all those groups that we mentioned have that kind of through line and that kind of vibe. So for them to kind of link up and form a collective, relatively short-lived, but still, the fucking records speak for themselves. 3 Feet High and Rising, my God, man. Like,
and it's funny that they had this situation where they were all sort of like jumping in and out, because Latifah said that after she finished working on this album, she felt that she didn't want to collaborate with so many people again in the near future because she thought her audience would think that she was trying to coast off of their talent or vice versa.
Oh, interesting.
You know, so I looked at her next album. Looks like she had no credited features, but it also looks like she invites in a ton more writers and producers.
That's an interesting, because in no way do I think that the features ever overshadow her presence on the record.
No.
In fact, I think she's quite gracious with the space that she allows. Mm-hmm. And like all the features definitely take up their space, but I never think that she gets bodied on her own song.
The only one I will give her is Moni Love.
That's true.
Dude. I do think that she fucking steals the spotlight in that song.
It's close, but yes, that is That is an agreeable position.
Yeah. Also, in a 2024 interview, Latifah reflected on what it was like to be making hip hop at this time when she said, first of all, you had to know somebody with equipment unless you came from money.
Yeah.
A microphone? You had to get to a microphone. You had to get to some music. We had to kind of practice this stuff live. We literally cut our cassette tapes to try and make a loop. We didn't have all of that stuff. We had to make a connection live with people and figure that part out first. So I think even getting studio time was, we didn't have Pro Tools. You didn't have 80 tracks to do. We didn't have auto-tune.
Yeah.
You know, she's just drawing attention to the fact that she was like, you're lucky if you get four tracks. So you better make it count, yeah. You know, like, and you're lucky if you get to record anything at all. So like the people who make it are the people who had to grind to get there.
Which again speaks to the brilliance of the production on this record, because they're not working with they're not working with 2026 technology. Yeah. And, you know, 1989, we're not talking about the Stone Ages here, but the quality of the samples and the way that those samples are flipped and warped to be doing that in 1989, it really, really speaks highly of DJ Mark the 45 King and all the folks who worked on this record, because the production on this record is fucking stellar.
The mission is music and rhythm backed by words, all in my system by techniques, I got my heart and heart into the music.
You know how much more work is involved.
Oh, so much more work. Totally, yeah. You're not copying. Yeah, you're fucking cutting tape or you're sampling and then running those samples. It's tedious and laborious.
Easily could have been made production-wise, like, today.
No, yeah, yeah.
So good.
But I don't know if it just sounded as cool.
Yeah.
All of this kind of runs in tandem with a mini tour of London where Queen Latifah was exposed to the burgeoning UK electronic music scene. And that influence is felt in a few spots on this record. This is also where she ran into Moni Love, who we'll talk about. We'll talk about shortly. I was kind of surprised on a couple of these tracks where I was like, damn, this is definitely like UK electro. Very cool. I have tracks next.
Let's talk. Track one. Dance for me. Dance for me. Right? It's such a fun and confident start to the album. What a fucking power move to start right off bragging about how incredible you are and then prove it by commanding your audience to dance to your beats.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Anytime you're sampling Sly and the Family Stone, you are on the right track.
And it's got the samples on this song are Dance to the Music by Sly and the Family Stone. That's probably the most obvious one.
Yep.
Rated X by Kool and the Gang.
Come on.
Which is used several times in this album. And Keep on Dancing by Alvin Cash.
Oh, they're all great.
Yeah.
They're so great. I've got a lyric pull.
Okay.
I want to say rapping about being good at rapping is a staple of early hip hop. It's never totally left. But this run that I'm about to give you right here.
Let's go.
It fucking crushes me. I love this. Yes. I love the cadence. The mission is music and rhythm. Rhythm backed by words, all in my system. Systemed by techniques. Techniques I got my heart in. Heart into the music. Music I take part in. One try, one God, one destiny. Just dance for me. Fucking the way that she just keeps hitting, like repeating those words and punch.
Her flow is so sick. And it's also just really satisfying to have her smoothly move from rapping into singing.
Oh, it's so good. Like you hit rhythm on the end and then you pick it back up as the first word of your next. I heard that and I was like, I need to run that back 9 times.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so cool. I don't know what that particular convention is or that particular writing convention is, but I don't see it often. And when I do, I'm like, I want to write like this. I could never write like this.
Oh, I know.
But God, I love that. It may be my favorite line or my favorite like run of lines on the record.
Maybe someday when we turn 19, we'll be able to write as well as she.
Yeah, maybe. I got a ways to go.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Track two is Mama Gave Birth to the Soul Children. Quite a mouthy title. Yeah, it's wordy.
Wordy. Yeah. Produced by Prince Paul, who co-produced De La Soul's first three albums, and this song features De La Soul. How many samples are on this song?
this song samples 15 other songs. It has more samples than any other song on the record. Some of those samples include a 12-inch remix of I Like Funky Music by Uncle Louie, Scorpio by Dennis Coffey and the Detroit Guitar Band.
Hell yes.
Merry Christmas, Baby by Otis Redding.
Mm-hmm.
And the theme to the Jeffersons, Moving On Up by Janae Dubois.
Come on.
It also samples songs by the Osmonds, Billy Squire, and Grandmaster Flash.
You're just throwing stuff out there.
Totally. There's so many fun lyric pulls from this track.
Yes, there is.
That Jefferson's theme song sample is even acknowledged at the end of Paz de Nuce's verse when he says, Polaroid flicks are back and you will know that the soul is moving on up like the Jefferson show.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So good. This track's really weird and fun and silly in how they keep switching roles from themselves.
Yeah.
And then they're like, Latifah's their mom and they're her children.
Yes.
And they make it very clear.
Very, very clear. It took me, you would think that. It took me a couple of listens to realize that this is like kind of a goofy song.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because the first go around, I was like, this is dumb.
Yeah.
Let me give you the lyric poll that I was like, what are we doing here, fellas? Next on the menu, we continue with the pasta, dipped in chocolate, served with lots of Twizzlers and honey. Yum, yum, yummy. Lyrics I'm flaunting is good for the tummy.
I saw
and
that.
And I was like, hang on, what? I don't know about that. But then you listen to it and you're like, this is goofy, right?
Okay, yeah.
It kind of gives the record a lighter feel. They're playful. This is a lot more. Like, all right. At first glance, I was like, I don't know.
No, it definitely is silly. They're like putting on tiny kids' voices, is De La Soul. And the, what is it? They keep repeating. What's the chorus thing that they keep repeating? Oh, yeah. They keep, in the breaks, they keep cheering, go, mommy, yeah. Go, mommy. I'm like, ew. Yeah.
Yeah.
But also, it, like, gives some context. She even comments on where producer Prince Paul fits into it all with this lyric. Prince Paul produces this, and it's a fly one. It had to be that way. He's one of my sons. Yes.
All right.
And as for the strange mother-sons dynamic, that even gets a little more context with the lyric. And if you're wondering why I got kids so big, they weren't born from the body. They were born from the soul.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
It's a very fun song.
Yeah.
It's a fun song. And they're clearly having a good time. It's rare that you're going to have a hip. It's rare that you're going to have a hip hop or a rap song use the words tummy.
Yeah, and mommy.
And mommy.
Yeah.
But you know what? They pull it off.
Yeah, hey, good for them.
It took me a couple listens, but
respect.
I'm on board with it.
Yeah, me too.
I Have Come Into My House next.
Yeah, track three.
This is one of the UK electronic songs that I was like, what
I
the
know.
Fuck is this?
What, I like, know. What? The second you said that, I was like, I know.
This one took me for a ride. I was like, what the shit is this?
I'll tell you why.
Tell me.
First of all, you want to talk about the group that it features?
Yeah, it's a group called Quasar.
Yeah, cool name.
I could find absolutely nothing about Quasar. I found a prog rock group of the same name, which, man, Quasar is the most prog rock band.
Yeah, 100%.
But it's not these guys. This song is just such a left turn from... What do you have on it?
This is the only comment I'm going to make on her sexuality because it's her business. But for someone that's been so private about their sexuality for most of their life, this is one of the gayest songs I've ever heard in my life. It is awesome. It's easily one of my favorite songs on the album, if it's not my favorite. It literally references ballroom culture repeatedly with the phrase, give me body.
Oh, yeah.
Over and over. And I understand the title is supposed to be in conjunction with her opening lyric, welcome to my queendom.
Mm-hmm.
Like she's ushering people to join her audience and dance. But I also feel like the word house has so many meanings in this context. It's the genre. It's like her castle she's bringing people into.
Yep.
But also when paired with the other ballroom reference, it feels intentional. It's all about dancing.
Yeah.
It is like a ballroom song.
Yeah, it's a jam is what it is. I I would have never picked up on any of that.
Instantly, I was like, did she just say give me? But I was like, this is needs to be on Drag Race.
It needs to be on everything. It needs to be on radio. It needs to be.
I love this song.
It's great.
Yeah.
I was pleasantly surprised at this sound.
Yeah.
I was like, damn, it doesn't sound like a lot of the rest of the record.
Totally.
It kind of sits outside of the rest of the record, but it's not. It doesn't stick out either. Yeah. Like, it's not like, ooh, like, well, that's kind of a weird, you know. Mm-mm.
It's just like another side to her.
Yeah.
There's a couple songs in this album that are like, oh, this is her doing reggae, you know, like this is her doing house.
And it's great.
Yeah.
It's great. Do you have the samples?
Yep. Give them to me. Don't Make Me Wait by Peach Boys. You hear that one a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Ain't We Funkin' Now by the Brothers Johnson.
Underrated.
One Nation Under a Groove by Funkadelic. And that one's really apparent in the like building of the instrumental.
Well, I think they lyrically allude to it too.
Oh, totally. And Ring My Bell by Anita Ward. You can totally hear that built in. The second I read those last two, I was like, oh, I could sing this whole song both of those songs.
It's awesome. The fucking choice of sample. We've said it before. The choice of samples on this record.
Oh, yes.
I want to check out DJ Mark the 45's King 45 collection.
I love him. Yeah. Because
he's got a stellar collection.
I have a quote where Latifah said, house is club. It was club to us because from Jersey, we had one of the strongest audiences for it, way starting back in the 70s until now. And now a lot of people around the country are catching on, but even the kids in New York didn't. The only people in New York that were really up on it were, and then the 45 King cuts her off and he was like, the people that came to Jersey. And she was like, those kind.
Those guys.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah.
I have Latifah's Law next.
Hell yeah.
And all I have is a lyric pull. You ready for this?
Yep.
BMWs and gold rope chains don't impress me or get you closer to the point you can undress me. Get skeezed, your nose will bleed. That's how they live life. Prepare to feel the wrath of the giver of all life.
I almost pulled that lyric. It's so good. I think that might be my favorite lyric on that song.
It is great. First of all, and foremost of all, we got to bring back Get Skeezed.
I know. I was like, cool.
That is cool.
Impress me and undress me with that flow. I was like, oh my God, she fucking killed him.
Prepare to feel the wrath of the giver of all life.
Yeah.
That is a nasty line.
Oh,
it's so,
so
good. It's another one that I was like, let me just run that back a few more times.
This song is not produced by the 45 King. It's produced by Louis Vega.
Louis Vega.
Louis Vega?
Yeah. His nickname is Louis Vega.
Oh.
How about that?
Okay, so it samples Darkest Light by Lafayette Afro Rock Band, Xiaomara by La Exclusiva, and Love Rap by Spoony G and the Treacherous Three. They are sampled a couple times on this album. I think the opening is so hard. Because this track is just about her acknowledging where she fits into a broken system and like fighting for her community.
Mm-hmm.
And she starts it off by saying, I'm back again because that's what you required of me. Steady rhyming and I'm so sick and tired of being forced to put suckers in their place. You make me mad enough to punch you in the face. But every time I hear that last line, I laugh because I think about how stupid I'd sound. Because the way she says it is like, you make me mad enough to punch you in the face.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
I couldn't sell it.
Yeah.
One would believe me. No, you make me mad enough to punch you in the face.
Oh,
no.
I just want to punch you right in the face.
Yeah. People will look at me like, no, you're not.
Yeah. But this track, I think it has some of her sharpest lines and
I agree.
Like most impressive flows on the album. Track five is Wrath of My Madness. It was the first single off of this album.
Really?
Yep.
I guess it made because it was one of the sides of the demo. That
for
makes
sure.
sense. Yeah.
It's been some of the samples are Chicken Strut by The Meters, Black Frost by Grover Washington Jr., and Cost of Living by Half Pint. And it's been sampled by a ton of people. Ice Cube, Eminem, Gangstar, Farside, Erykah Badu. But in both Quasimodo and Madlib songs. Man. And of course, Shaq.
Of course.
Shaq Diesel.
Platinum rap album, Shaq Diesel.
But I think that's crazy.
Oh, yeah.
But I think the most fun sample, in my opinion, is in the form of a tribute when Lil' Kim actually released her own version of the song titled Wrath of Kim's Madness.
Wrath of Kim's Madness.
Yeah, so cool.
That is cool.
That's an ultimate tribute.
And you have mentioned your love of Lil' Kim.
Yeah.
Many times.
We'll cover her at some point.
And we're going to, and she's on the list.
She's on the list.
She's on the list.
We'll get to her.
I have the pros next.
Immediately come back from summer break with Lil' Kim.
With Lil' Kim? I mean, it's not a bad idea.
You heard it here first.
The pros, I would say that this is the first song on the album where I thought the record kind of showed its age.
It's also track six.
I think Queen Latifah's flows up to this point sell the rhymes really easily. But in my opinion, here, neither she nor Daddy-O really settle into a comfortable pocket. I think the production on this, it almost is really great. Mm. And I think it just shows its age a little. Also, I've got a lyric pull that I don't love,
but I do love.
You ready?
Yeah.
So we can go rhyme for rhyme if you wish. But eating you suckers is my favorite dish. And I warned you suckers, if you messed with me, you'll be the next ingredient in my recipe. Start and don't finish. I'll hunt you down, and you can't run forever, so you'll be found. And with nowhere to run and nowhere to hide, how you want to be eaten, boy, baked or fried?
I love it.
Oh, I
really love it.
No, I don't.
I like it a lot.
I like it in a way that I don't like it.
I like it.
I was like,
I think it's kind of fucking awesome.
You can't
and funny.
Run forever, so don't. Yeah, run and hide, like. Okay.
I like it.
Hey, you know what? It's better than anything I could come up with. I'm just saying, it feels like 1989.
Oh, for sure. This is like the reggae song.
It is
on
the reggae
album
song.
Too.
And that's probably the other part. Like, we've talked about, like, reggae is kind of a difficult sell for me. That's probably why I don't love it as much. But this rhymes is a little clunky.
This song,
this
definitely, it's one of the ones where, like, I would hear it sometimes and I would be like, oh, I don't know how much I love this song. And then I would hear it other times and I would be like, no, it's really, really good. I do like it. Okay. It won me back. But also it samples only one song. This
wow,
track.
That's low.
And it's Don't Lose Your Mind by Miles Davis.
I mean,
if you're going to go for it, go for it.
That alone makes it cool.
Yeah.
Like, it just, all right, you've sold me.
Yeah.
It's cool. Ladies First.
Track seven. This is a legendary song.
Probably the most well-known on... Try that again.
No. Perfect.
We can sample that. Probably the most well-known song on this album.
Yeah.
It fucking rules. Features Moni Love. I've got some stuff where I'm going to get into the fucking weeds with this. So What have you got to say?
Okay, I just have a couple things to get out of the way. We got the samples. Daisy Lady by Seventh Wonder. Listen to the Music by King Arison. And I Feel Good by James Brown. The way the horns from Listen to the Music are pitched and rearranged for this song is masterful.
Dude.
I was like, oh shit, those are the horns in that song. And how did you even move them in that way?
This is the peak of the production on the record.
He's on fire.
Both Queen Latifah and Moni Love destroy their verses. Moni Love especially.
She's so good.
There's a very good reason why this is the most well-known song from this record. This is the peak of it.
Well, also, I read somewhere that this was the first hip-hop song that ever featured two female rap artists that weren't in a collective together.
Really?
Yeah.
Cool.
What? That is another, like, that's fucking history. Two women that weren't already in a group don't have to be in competition and can just celebrate and support one another.
Well, and that was the conceit of making the song. She was talking about how she kind of looked around and saw that more or less that women were being pit against each other and being made to compete. And while, you know, she's obviously a competitive person, she was like, we can get more done if we elevate each other.
Yeah.
And that was the whole point of the song. Like, let's do this together.
I saw, an interview similarly where she said, like, Moni was a friend, and all I knew is that when I make this album, I just know I have to put her on a song. That's like, she's the one person I know I need to get in the studio.
She absolutely crushes this song. I love it. You ready to get into the weeds?
Yeah.
So I was very curious about what Moni Love had done.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the her resume is substantial. Mm-hmm. But my favorite thing that she has done is that she contributed lyrics and background vocals on the self-titled Prince-produced hip-hop album, Carmen Electra.
What? What?
Oh, yes.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yes.
Well, Cody, wait. What if we cover this Carmen Electra album on an episode?
That's what's coming in September. I listened to some of it. I would say that Prince's hip-hop Prince's relationship with hip hop is relatively spotty overall. Obviously quite a master on many things. Hip hop is not one of them. This is exactly what you would think it is. And I'm pretty sure that they were together for a bit.
Yeah.
But this led me down and man, once I found that I had to learn everything about what was going on.
You're like, we're not covering this album anymore.
No. Yeah. I took a hard left turn, but I found an entirely unrelated interview, not even related to the Carmen Electra album, but an unrelated interview from People magazine with this headline. Carmen Electra shows off tattoo inspired by people who've, quote, stabbed me in the back. Exclusive. So I'm going to show you a picture of the tattoo.
Uh-oh.
You know, it's pretty straightforward, right? It's really, right, just a...
What?
Prayer hands with the rosary beads.
Yeah, right? I thought it was going to be like a knife.
No. This is what she has to say about it. I figured if I have God's hands on my back, go ahead and try and stab me and see what kind of karma you get. I've had so many swords I pulled out of my back, I've turned them into paddles, and I've used them as paddles to get to shore. Now I'm on the other side, and now I see it, and now I know what I don't want. When asked if she was speaking about being stabbed in the back or her personal life, she replies, everything, dating.
Okay.
I don't like liars. It's just really nice when you're with someone who's just really into you. I've had that before. It obviously didn't last. This is from February of this year.
What? What? What's she up to these days?
I was obsessed with this article. I could not, but I was like, what? What a just... She uses those knives as swords.
And uses them as paddles. Paddles to shore.
Can you fucking believe that People magazine had that headline and then in parentheses put exclusive?
Yeah. I was like, when is the exclusive coming?
Yeah, I know. Who in the world is coming in to their pitch on Monday and is like, I've got
Carmen
the hot
Electra
guy.
Got a new tattoo.
What is her comment?
What?
That was my rabbit hole.
Oh, loved it.
Check out the Prince produced Carmen Electra album. Or don't if you want to not.
We all want to give birth to the new generation of prophets because it's late. I break into a lyrical freestyle. Grab the mic, look at the crowd.
Oh my God.
So back to ladies first.
Yes.
This track was engineered and mixed by Paul C., who is another one of those names that does not get brought up enough. He's deeply influential sampling pioneer who Questlove called damn near the Jay Dilla of his day.
Cool.
He worked with Devo, Organized Confusion, Kwame, Queen Latifah, Biz Markie, Ultramagnetic MCs, and Eric B. and Rakim, among others, before his tragic and still unsolved murder in 1989 at age 24.
Wow.
He was super, super young, and everybody who talks about him says that this guy was basically a prodigy. He understood drum sampling in a way that people didn't. And I mean, you just heard the people that he worked with. Devo is like kind of the weird standout, but like Eric B. and Rakim. I read a little bit more into his unsolved case. It looks like it's a situation where they probably know who did it, but don't have enough to put him away. But 24 years old. And
horrible.
Paul C., definitely worth looking more into. Moving forward from that, the music video for this was directed by Fab Five Freddy.
Hey.
Did you watch the music video?
No.
It is set against a backdrop of the South African apartheid area. era, not era. The South African apartheid era. The video kind of juxtaposes historical footage of black female political activists, including Harriet Tubman, Sojourner Truth, Angela Davis, Winnie Mandela, Madam C.J. Walker, and Cicely Tyson. With scenes of Queen Latifah dressed in military-inspired African garb, strategically replacing chess pieces on a war map with raised black power fists. It's very cool. Damn. It's probably about the most militant the album gets. And in the video, she invited a whole bunch of female rap contemporaries, including Shelly Thunder and Miss Melody, to appear to present like this united front against industry exploitation.
That's fucking cool.
It's a cool music video.
Yes.
Very, very cool.
Damn.
Not as cool as the Carmen Electra Prince produced hip hop album. Yeah, but
that's feminism.
That's feminism.
Yes.
The only thing that I have to say about Evil That Men Do is that it is an interesting song made interesting by the fact that KRS-One is the feature. And some of the stuff that KRS-One has said might be considered evil that men do.
Yeah, 100%. But to be clear, this song isn't. Technically, it's not like a feminist song. It's like a song about men as in like humans. Like,
yes.
It's about like capitalism and power and greed, etc. and stuff. I have a bunch. I could read some lyrics if you want to hear them.
Go for it.
My favorite like throwaway lyric is the lines will flow like fluid while you guzzle. That is, so, it's just like silly, but it's so good. Okay, so I'm going to breeze through the last two verses really quick, or like part of the last two verses, because they are really well written. The first one is both her and KRS-One, and the second one is just her. She says, a woman strives for a better life, but who the hell cares because she's living on welfare. The government can't come up with a decent housing plan, so she's in no man's land. It's a sucker who tells you you're equal. You don't need him. Johannesburg's crying for freedom. Mm. We the people hold these truths to be self-evident, but there's no response from the president.
Yeah.
Someone's living the good life tax-free, except for a girl who can't find a way to be crack-free. And that's just part of the message I thought I had to send you about the evil that men do. Tell me, don't you think it's a shame when someone can put a quarter in a video game, but when a homeless person approaches you on the street, you can't treat him the same? It's time to teach the deaf, the dumb, the blind that black-on-black crime only shackles and binds. You to a doom, a fate worse than death, but there's still time left. To stop putting your conscience on cease and bring about some type of peace, not only in your heart, but also in your mind, it will benefit all mankind. Then there will be one thing that will never stop you, and it's the evil that men do.
There you go.
That is so well written.
Incredibly well written, and she delivers it like a fucking
Wow. I really thought that I was like, damn, those are some of my favorite verses you did on the whole album.
Yo, yeah.
It was just like so matter of fact, so direct, and the flow is so consistent throughout.
It's probably the most protesty.
Yeah, for
on
sure.
On the record. And man, she's in her bag on that one.
Badass. So badass. To wrap it all up, when diving into the deepest corners of the internet to research this episode, I came across a completely ridiculous comment about her name. This person said that they think it's justified to hate Queen Latifah, and the reason they gave was, it's because she calls herself Queen. It takes a special kind of asshole to name themselves something that automatically establishes their social superiority over everyone else. This kind of ignorance is so laughable for how completely uninformed it is. Time and time again, Queen Latifah has proven to the world that she's nothing if not humble. As a multi-talented, incomparably successful woman, she has repeatedly put her career on the line by choosing to stand up for what she believed in from the start, tackling heavy social justice issues like sexism, racism, classism, gun violence, homophobia, xenophobia, and domestic violence, which with such a cool head, she makes sticking up for your beliefs look as easy as taking a drink of water. She's a hustler, an entrepreneur, mm-hmm. because no matter how much money she earns, she always remembers where she came from and that nothing in life is promised. She's taken every no thrown her way in her career and spun it into an always, because she knows that when she wins, we all win.
Yeah.
It's a win for justice. It's a win for women in hip hop. It's a win for putting your head down, doing the work, prioritizing your personal life, speaking up when you know it's time, and frankly, doing it in style.
Goddamn right.
To me, that's the behavior mm-hmm. of a queen. So whether you've heard it before or never heard it at all, throw this bad boy on and all hail the fucking queen.
Goddamn right.
Yeah. Yay. The people hold these truths to be self-evident. But there's no
response from the president. Someone's living a good life. Thank you all so much for listening. If you would like to hit us up on social media, you can find us at Earwax Pod, Instagram, and TikTok.
And if you'd like to send us an email, email us at earwaxpod@gmail.com. You can send us all kinds of things there. Nice things, preferably. Mm-hmm. Thank you all so much for listening. Happy Juneteenth, and we will see you next time.